With Galway, let's bring you a Galway song. No, 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 not Galway, babe. The Galway Girl by the High Kings.
Well, I took a stroll on the old long walk of a day. I met a little girl and we stopped to talk of a fine soft day. And I asked you, friend, what's a fella to do? Does an arrow flash and a rhyme of the blue? And I knew right then, I could take in a world. From the song to the song, but it's always a girl.
And we'll return to that song as well. But friends, I want to take you to New York City and to indeed the starting point tomorrow of New York City Marathon, the largest in the world, which indeed takes place tomorrow. As I welcome Neil Johnson, again, the CEO of CREE, West of Ireland Cardiac and Stroke Foundation, which was established in Galway in 1985. Neil, you're very welcome.
Good afternoon, Adrian. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Now, maybe many would, you know, be surprised, though, indeed, if we go back to 1985, the West of Ireland in particular, the other side of the Shannon, if they had serious cardiac problems or, a stroke, they really had to cross the country, literally, to Dublin. That was the closest place for diagnostic and cardiac surgery. A bit hard to believe, but that was the truth. Tell us a little bit about the establishment of CREE, West of Ireland Cardiac and Stroke Foundation.
Sure. Well, as you say, the history goes back to 1985, and at that time, as you rightly pointed out, cardiac patients on the west coast of Ireland were effectively disadvantaged in terms of their access to both emergency cardiac care and I guess longer-term cardiac care because, unfortunately, the cardiac infrastructure in the west of Ireland was not on a par with that on the east coast. And it was out of that very need that the organization was born. And since 1985, through constant fundraising, we have managed to work with what was the Western Health Board, is now the HSE, to work collaboratively to bring to a point now where actually cardiac services on the West Coast are as good, if not better than other parts of the country as a result of that fundraising efforts.
It's not a stretch to say better, state of the art, amazing progress and really something that serves not just Galway, but indeed a lot of the west coast of Ireland. What type of service is provided? Can you give us a kind of rundown there?
Sure. Well, back in 1985, for example, we had a situation where ambulances, for example, would not have been equipped to the level that they should have been, and certainly not to the level that they are today. We have, despite the geographic challenges of the distances between hospitals in the west of Ireland, University, or Galway University Hospital now, is the specialist cardiac centre. And we have an air ambulance service, which now will take people literally from as far north as Donegal and as far south as Clare to Galway if they're within the defined category for emergency procedures. So we've come a long way, particularly in the cardiac space. We now have open heart surgery in Galway, which up to 10 years ago was not available in the West, and patients from the West of Ireland up to 10 years ago would have had to go on a national waiting list and wait to be called to Dublin for their surgery. And not only was there a wait, but then you had the whole aspect of having to effectively relocate to a bed and breakfast in Dublin for the family members who wanted to be near their loved ones. And one of our campaigns was, in fact, to bring heart surgery west of the Shannon, and we've achieved that. And one of the projects that we're very proud of now is we have opened a centre in Galway where we have three apartments which are made available to the relatives of those receiving stroke or cardiac care at Galway University Hospital. So we have a fairly comprehensive situation now whereby, for example, this literally happens that somebody could be picked up by helicopter, let's say in a remote part of Mayo, would be on the cath lab table in Galway in less than 90 minutes, have a procedure done there, and their family then would make their own way to Galway to be beside the patient, and if they needed accommodation, they can stay at the Cree Heart and Stroke Centre, which is literally 800 metres from the hospital. So all in all, we have moved a long way from the situation that was not so many years ago.
It's refreshing to hear positive stories about the health services in Ireland, because God knows the entire regional health services have been much maligned. Might I ask you if some of that has to do with various health region services? Some are better than others, and how much can we attribute the cutback in services since the collapse of the Celtic Tiger back in 2008?
Well, I think it would be fair to say that even prior to the boom time in Ireland, unfortunately, the West Coast, in terms of general health services, but particularly, I can obviously only speak from the cardiac space, just did not get a fair share of the financial pie. And so when the financial crisis hit us, we were obviously, we were definitely on the road to getting to some place of equilibrium as a result of the fundraising efforts that we undertook. And I think, without doubt, there are challenges in the health service in Ireland, no question about that, and a lot of these are resource-related. However, I think in the case of cardiac care, we are fortunate that Cree was around when it was established and so over its history has built a support base which has allowed us to get to a point where actually cardiac services are actually in a good place today.
It is not an exaggeration to emphasize the the fundraising aspects of not just you know, your foundation, but also that a lot of people in Ireland, and Ireland still, you know, per capita is among the most generous in the world. Many would say that without you know, the support and fundraising efforts for you know, for the third world countries, for distressed areas around the world, that the Irish are indeed extraordinarily generous. Some would say that that dates back to, you know, our own famine, our own history. But fundraising is way up there. Many would say that, you know, that the governments, that the governments of Ireland, successive governments, have kind of said, well, you know, they're doing so well anyway with their own fundraising that we don't have to be that concerned. I just want to ask you, though, as, you know, it's a political football on our side of the Atlantic to say that, you know, a national health scheme is indeed without flaw, and why don't we all get on board? Can you just tell us about the, if not negative, you know, the crux of the national health scheme, and how, in fact, that affects people who get on that waiting list?
Yeah, well, you raise a couple of points there. First of all, in the context of the generosity of the Irish, I think that's always well known. You mentioned the famine, and of course, the tradition in Ireland of the mettle, of self-help, of coming together and helping each other out. That's a long historical tradition in our country, and I think that is what has attributed to the fact that there are so many health-related not-for-profit organisations in our country. And yes, you know, as somebody who has been the cold face of fundraising for almost 25 years, very often you will hear people say, well, you know, it's all very well supporting you, but in actual fact what you're doing is you're letting the government off the hook.
Right.
And, you know, personally, I guess I would have had to reflect on those comments. And my personal conclusion on that was, yes, there's no question about it that in an ideal world, the government should be funding the infrastructural and support services that we have had to go out and raise funds for. However, the reality is that that hasn't happened and hasn't been happening in the cases of the special needs that existed in the west of Ireland. And so we would have taken the view that, well, you know, self-help is the best help. But having said that, we didn't blindly go out and just raise funds and step back and just hand, you know, a check to the health service.
Yeah.
A lot of the developments that we would have funded over the years would actually have been co-funded or collaborative funding, where we would have sat down with the health services and said, look, this is something that's needed. If we raise this amount, can you match it? And that was a successful model. Another variable in the Irish context, of course, is that in effect we have a two-tier health system. We have a health system for those who can afford health insurance, and we have a system for those who can't. And in the west of Ireland, approximately 40% of the population are in the latter category, and these are what we refer to as public patients. And so, given that disadvantage, there is an added reason for organizations like ours to exist and to push forward for, you know, healthcare development. But it is a fact that in Ireland, probably one of the largest sectors of the not-for-profit space would be in the health arena, where health services are just not where they should be, and people effectively decide to roll up their sleeves and make sure that people get the best that they possibly can.
Yeah. My guest, our friend Neil Johnson, CEO of Cree West of Ireland Cardiac and Stroke Foundation. Lest we give the impression that universal health care is peculiar to Ireland, it would seem that there, the same thing might apply, say to the UN, to other countries, and it depends on which side of the issue you're on. For those who've had bad experiences, again, with very little facilities for, say, for urgent care, and the private industry, there is a first of all, I think that comes with its own problems, not where it is, including Ireland. But there's also the kind of division, or at least the rumor division, that, if you're well-heeled or, if you can afford a private hospital, that's where you belong. And is there somewhat of a feeling, refrain from saying stigma, but is there a feeling that the rich get walloped and the less fortunate get the same type of care and service?
Yeah, it's a complex one, and again, I guess from a personal perspective, I think part of the complexity is that very often at the level of the doctors who work in the private system,
yeah.
Very often them, very many of them hold dual roles, so they're also working in the public system, and that type of situation creates a lot of conflicts of interest, and I'm not quite sure what the the best solution to that is, other than a radical restructuring of our health service. But we have so many challenges as it is to actually begin to dismantle and rebuild. It's probably not something that's going to happen today or tomorrow.
Is it perceived that the great number of young adults who go into the medical field have one eye on immigration, and I think that particularly becomes evident, say, with nurses who are in great demand in other places around the world, including the United States.
Well, this is a big problem facing the health service in Ireland at the moment, and that is the attraction and retention of indeed all healthcare professions. You mentioned nursing, but also we have problems at the level of GPs, for example.
Right.
Young GPs are not attracted to practicing in Ireland, and unfortunately then are leaving the country, and we have situations particularly in rural Ireland, in the west of Ireland, where there are many GP practices where they're currently finding it difficult to replace retired general practitioners, and that's a real problem, because as you can appreciate, in a rural community, having access to a primary care physician is very important. All of the hospitals in the country are challenged around attracting nurses. Again, many of our nurses who are so well trained are leaving for you know, better paid jobs in different parts of the world. So it is a big issue for us.
Yeah. It's no secret that the role of the GP in Ireland, and particularly west of the Shannon, is one that can be compared to a vocation and to, you know, a real commitment. Many would say that perhaps in the boom years that there should have been better recognition rather than, you know, just letting the immigration in the, you know, in medical services to let that thrive. And that brings us close to home, because we have, and there are a number of American doctors who would do a hell of a lot better here or other places in the world who've returned to Ireland, and indeed a member of our own family, Dr. Lane Byrne, who was bred and buttered in Albany, went to Galway University and to the medical school, graduated and stayed there. Are there many, I know the answer already, but has Ireland now relied upon other nations to provide nursing care, to provide, you know, medical care, doctors?
Yeah, absolutely, and we see this all the time, and I think you're right about the point of, you know, the GP, or as the term is, general practitioner. It's yeah. It's the first point of contact in the health service for a patient, we have a situation because I guess with the increased burden of chronic diseases, our hospitals now are deeply challenged to accommodate the number of patients presenting there, and increasingly there's a tendency to try and push care back into the community. But the problem there is, as I indicated, you have the age of the GP population significantly increasing, a lot of them coming to retirement or retiring, poor investment in primary care, and the consequences of that, you know, is there to be seen, and you're absolutely right. We do now see a tendency that, you know, we have our doctors and nurses are now from other countries, and I think that definitely reflects the lack of recognition, as you say, and lack of investment in the years when we could have.
We could take you know, an example of, say, the regional hospital in Limerick, which was through the course of time, which became kind of run down, and somehow right on the same grounds, you know, state-of-the-art hospital facilities that are kind of sitting there, and the excuse, which is of little comfort to a huge area that the hospital, is designed to accommodate. They're saying, well, we don't have enough staff. We don't have. This is after multi-million dollar investment. Is that typical of the services, the medical service in Ireland? And if so, what's the primary reason, or is that just used as an excuse?
Well, I think I don't think I could say that is typical. I'm not very familiar with the situation in Limerick Hospital, but I do know that there have been situations in hospitals where, and very often this has happened, where organizations like ours, for example, not-for-profits, would put up the funding to put a piece of equipment in place, and then unfortunately there's no staff to operate the equipment. Again, I think what this boils down to, is a personal view in this, is that we went through a time of enormous prosperity and boom, and obviously I have a vested interest in the health service. I would say that we did not take the choices we could have taken around investment in those times. And then obviously the bust came, and there were cutbacks right across the board, and we're still reeling from that. That's the reality.
A great number of of prospective runners are here from Ireland. Many, including your own organisation. Doing so to bring A, awareness, and secondly, to raise funds for their own projects, including yours. Now, you have your own contingent of runners from Ireland participating in the world's largest, greatest marathon tomorrow.
We're part of a 250-strong Irish contingent taking to the start line at Staten Island tomorrow morning. I would say the vast majority of these runners are actually running for charity. It has been, I know in our own context, the Cree context, the New York City Marathon has been one of our biggest fundraisers for many, many years. In the latter 3 to 5 years, it has diminished somewhat in terms of, the coming out of the economic the difficult times we had in Ireland. It was difficult for people to take on that fundraising challenge. But yes, tomorrow is a big day for Irish charities here participating in the New York City Marathon. I'd obviously like to take this opportunity to wish them all the very best and to thank those in particular who are carrying our colours tomorrow and running for Cree.
Cree, again, your fundraising efforts not confined to Galway, without indeed diluting the great community fundraising efforts. This is an opportunity to also shed light on your organization. I'm delighted to welcome you today to do that. But let us give an opportunity for those, including myself, who couldn't run a half a block. But let's give people a chance, first of all, to learn about Cree, the West of Ireland Cardiac Stroke Foundation, how they can get information and to perhaps make a donation of any size.
Sure. First of all, in terms of reaching out to us or contacting us, we have a website which is cree.ie, so that's CROI.ie. And by going onto that website, people will get a good understanding of who we are. But I'd also like to take this opportunity to mention a relatively new organization called the County Mayo Foundation.
Yes, indeed.
And they are an initiative by the people of Mayo to, raise funds across the world for projects that are Mayo-based, and we have a very important project aligned with the Mayo Foundation, which is basically taking cardiac screening out into the remote and rural parts of County Mayo, and we're very grateful to people like James Waldron, who's the president, and Siobhan Carney, who's the vice president of the County Mayo Foundation.
And also, might I add to that, Mike Hannon,
who's the executive director. They're doing great work, and we're delighted that they've come behind us on the project that we're working with them on for Mayo. And in terms of people perhaps wanting to make a donation, through the County Mayo Foundation.org would probably be the best way to do it in terms of the tax efficiency and so forth for people living in the state.
That's right. A tax exempt 501c3 organization here in the United States. I want to wish you luck tomorrow and also to the contingent, 250 strong. And those are only the ones we know about.
Absolutely.
There are a great number.
Absolutely. No, it's a major occasion tomorrow. Long tradition of Irish people coming to New York, doing the New York City Marathon. Many, indeed my own wife, for example, will be doing her 13th tomorrow. So it's a fantastic event. The people of New York through the five boroughs, you know, give the runners enormous support and welcome. So we wish them well, of course, and thank you as well for this opportunity to highlight a little bit of our organization and what we're doing in the west of Ireland.
The weather tomorrow is even cooperating.
I believe. But as we've been coming to New York for many years, we know only too well that you could literally have all seasons on the one day, so you never know until the day itself.
Again, thank you for what you do and for bringing us indeed a great profile of Cree, West of Ireland Cardiac and Stroke Foundation. My guest, Neil Johnson, who is the CEO again. Good luck tomorrow.
Thank you, Adrian.
And as mentioned, we're going to return to the song.